I am Bill Courtwright with Living Right with Bill Courtwright, and this is the Stress Mastery Podcast, where we take you from the science to the spirituality of stress mastery.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Stress Mastery Podcast. I am your host, Bill Courtwright, and I am here with the super millennial, David Barreto, giving us the Friday millennial perspective. How are you doing? Happy Friday.
It's always good. It's Friday.
Well, this one's going to be really good for me because I'm going to be I'll be gone for the next couple of weeks. Get ready to do the final preps for this competition. And David will be taking the podcast over next week with Mark Middlestead. It'll be fun. They'll have some fun together. And then we're going to do some throwback episodes through the holiday a little bit. And so I'll be out. Now, those that are emailing me and things they want, I will be out of circulation for the next 2 weeks. There's nothing else I can focus on but this particular contest. And I will give people an update, the story of behind the scenes, because it is quite the process. It's quite the process. So I just want everybody to know that. So if you don't hear from me, because I get a lot of emails, and it's not that I'm ignoring them, I will not be answering any emails, so you know.
Yeah, we'll put out an email blast for anybody who's not listening, just because we don't want you to think that we're putting off anything that you guys are sending us. So if you have any questions, you'll email me, David@livingrightwithbillcourtwright, if it needs to be handled now. And then if it is something that you just have a question for Bill, just be patient with us. We'll be coming back and we'll...
Yeah, because several people from the community have blood work pending. Don't worry, I will get to you guys. I'm not going to just be able to do it in these next 2 weeks. Okay? Yep. So don't worry. I see you, Greg. I saw it. Don't worry. I'll get it back to you. Sandra, I'll get your stuff back to you. Don't worry. So this week, our topic has been self-love. And on the weekend edition of the Stress Mastery Podcast, host Mark Middlestead kicked it off with What is Love? On Monday with the Super Millennial, David talked on Just Be You. Health Huddles was on the will of volition versus willpower. This week's Meeting of the Minds, we talked on the apathy state. And yesterday's Connection Thursday was ending self-hatred. And today, we continue our book study, The Book of Joy by Archbishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama. And before we start that, Big D, it's all yours.
All right. Here's going to be your last invitation and reminder. Tomorrow, we will be doing the Higher Goal Setting class, part 2, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm going to say this again for those of you who aren't in the community. There is a 30-day free trial that does include this and all access to the community. There is literally no financial responsibility for you signing up. Go in 30 days, check it out, get class 2. If you don't like it, you can leave without any charges. If you guys come in, I guarantee you guys would like to stay. If you guys have questions, email me, David@livingrightwithbillcourtwright.com. For those of you in the community, click event, go to the Higher Goal Setting class 2, and you're all set.
And no, I'm not going to take my shirt off. I've had a couple of people ask me if I would take my shirt off at the webinar. You know, maybe, you know what? No. Because I think it changes our rating if I take the shirt off. I'm not sure. All right, yeah, so sure. I'm not sure. So we're going to continue our book study, The Book of Joy by Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. And we are doing the second part of the section, Suffering and Adversity, Passing Through Difficulties. And I'll pick up where I left off last week. The Archbishop was laughing. Joy, it seemed, was a strange alchemy of mind over matter. The path to joy, like with sadness, did not lead away from suffering and adversity, but through it. As the Archbishop had said, nothing beautiful comes without some suffering. Hinpa shared how the Dalai Lama often viewed his exile as an opportunity. His Holiness often says that when you become a refugee, you get closer to life, Hinpa said, speaking no doubt from his own experience as well, because there's no room for pretense. In this way, you get closer to truth. Archbishop, I said, maybe we could turn to you for a moment. The Dalai Lama is saying that you actually feel more joy after you've succeeded in the face of opposition. I stopped as I saw the Archbishop gazing at the Dalai Lama with a sense of amazement. I'm really actually very humbled listening to His Holiness the Archbishop said, because I frequently mention to people the fact that his serenity, his calm, and joyfulness, we would probably have said in spite of the adversity, but it seems like he's saying because of the adversity that this has evolved for him. The Archbishop was holding the Dalai Lama's hand, patting and rubbing his palm affectionately. It just increases my own personal admiration for him. It almost seems perverse, but one wants to say thank goodness for that the Chinese invaded Tibet. Yes, because I don't think that we would have had the same contact. We certainly would not have had the same friendship. And then seeing the ironic humor in history, the Archbishop started to cackle, you probably would not have gotten a Nobel Peace Prize. The Dalai Lama was now also laughing as they poked fun at these esteemed prizes, as if to say that we could never know what in the end will come of our suffering and adversity, what is good and what is bad. Certainly, he was not saying that the Peace Prize or their friendship would somehow justify the suffering of millions that the Chinese invasion had caused. But in a bizarre way, a perverse, really, as the Archbishop had said, the Dalai Lama would have never become a global spiritual leader without being chased out of his own closeted kingdom. It reminded me of one famous Chinese story about the farmer whose horse ran away. His neighbors are quick to comment to his bad luck, and the farmer responds that no one can know what is good and what is bad. And when the horse comes back with a wild stallion, the neighbors are quick to comment, this time talking about the farmer's good luck. Again, the farmer replies that no one can know what is good and what is bad. And when the farmer's son breaks his leg trying to tame the wild stallion, the neighbors now are certain of the farmer's bad luck. Again, the farmer says that no one knows. And when war breaks out and all the able-bodied young men are conscripted into battle, except the farmer's son, who was spared because of the broken leg. But you come to your question, the Archbishop said. I was thinking as the Dalai Lama was speaking about something that was personal. Although perhaps you could extrapolate it more generally, I'm thinking of Nelson Mandela. As we said, Nelson Mandela, when he went to prison, was a very angry young man, or youngish man. He was the commander-in-chief of the military wing of the ANC. As we said, he believed firmly that the enemy had to be decimated. He and his comrades had been found guilty in the travesty of justice, that this guy who went in aggressive and angry, he comes onto Robben Island and is mistreated as most of them were. Today, when people go and see, they see his cell. There's a bed. They didn't have a bed. They were sleeping on the floor. No mattress, just a thin little thing, the Archbishop was pinching his thumb and forefinger to emphasize the discomfort and pain and suffering that he endured even in sleep. These were sophisticated, educated people. What do they do? What are they made to do? They are made to go and dig in the quarry. And they are wearing very inadequate clothing. Nelson Mandela and all of them wore shorts, even in the winter. They were made to do almost senseless work, breaking rocks, sewing posts, office bags. He was a highly qualified lawyer. There he's sitting and sewing. And during a visit to Robben Island with Ahmad Kathrada, one of Mandela's colleagues and fellow prisoners, he showed us in the cafeteria the different rations that they were given to each prisoner based on their race. A daily reminder of this obsessive racial fascism that they were fighting. 6 ounces of meat for coloreds and Asians, and 5 ounces for Bantus, blacks, 1 ounce of jam or syrup for the coloreds or the aesthetics, and none for the Bantus. I mean, it must have frustrated him to no end, made him very angry. God was good and said, you're going to stay here 27 years. And after those 27 years, he emerges on the other side as someone of immense magnanimity. Because in an extraordinary way, his suffering helped him to grow. Where they thought it was going to break him, it helped him. It helped him to see the point of view of the other. 27 years later, he comes out kind, caring, ready to trust his earnest enemy. So, how did he do it? I asked. I mean, why do you think he was able to see the suffering and nobly rather than embittering? He didn't see it. It happened. So why did it happen for him? Because for others, it has not. Yes, of course, some people, it would embitter them. The Archbishop had once explained to me that suffering can neither embitter or ennoble us, that the difference lies in whether we are able to find meaning in our suffering. Without meaning, when suffering seems senseless, we can easily become embittered. But when we can find a shred of meaning or redemption in our suffering, it can ennoble us, as it did for Nelson Mandela. Now, one has learned in very many mistakes, he continued, that he told me that during those 18 years, he faced some real dangers. I thought, of course, he was talking about the dangers of his life. He told me he was in danger of losing his compassion for the Chinese guards. I could hear a gasp in a room at this extraordinary statement, that the greatest danger for this man had been the risk of losing his compassion, losing his heart, losing his humanity. Now, he is still alive, age 97, and his mind is still very good shape, sharp and healthy. So as you mentioned, his spirituality and his experience reinforced his ability for compassion and human qualities. So like in Nelson Mandela's case, when you are imprisoned, as you said, it's normal to experience great difficulties. But these experiences can, with the right way of thinking, lead you to have a great inner strength. So I think that this is something very useful, particularly when we're passing through difficulties. I was quite struck by the Dalai Lama's phrase of passing through difficulties. We often feel that suffering will engulf us or that suffering will never end. But if we can realize that it too will pass, or as the Buddhists say, that it is impermanent, we can survive them more easily and perhaps appreciate what we have to learn from them, find meaning in them, so that we come out the other side, not embittered, but ennobled. The depth of our suffering can also result in the height of our joy. Shani Deva, a Buddhist monk and scholar, described the virtues of suffering. Because of the shock suffering causes us, our arrogance falls away. Suffering also gives rise to compassion for all others who are suffering because of our experience of suffering. We avoid actions that will bring suffering to others. Lapon La and Dr. Chodrick would have known these teachings by Shantideva and may have clung to them during their years of hardship, seemingly endless suffering, making meaning out of what must have at times felt like meaningless agony. The Dalai Lama and the Archbishop were emphasizing that some degree of tolerance and acceptance is essential, as is realizing that these sorrows happen to all people, not just to us, and not because we've done anything wrong. The year before our dialogues, my father fell down a flight of stairs and suffered a traumatic brain injury. Doctors explained that with a broken bone, we know exactly how long it will take to heal. But with the brain, we never know how it will heal and if it will heal completely. For more than a month, he was in intensive care unit and neuro rehab in varying states of delirium. As we worried whether he would ever return to his former self, to his great mind and heart, I will never forget the first telephone call I received from him from the hospital, since we did not know if he would ever be able to communicate consciously again. When my brother was visiting with my dad, he said, "Sorry you've had this terrible experience." My father replied, "Oh no, not at all. It was all part of my curriculum." And that ends the chapter. Wow. So that's why I wanted to do the second part of this chapter, because I think it's powerful. If you didn't hear last week's, go back and listen to last week's Friday book study. And there's a lot to take away from this. There's quite a bit to take away from this. So, David, what are your thoughts on suffering and adversity and passing through difficulties?
Man, he just said it right there at the end. This is all part of the curriculum. Now, he didn't say a part of my experience, my struggles, my nothing. It was a part of his learning experience. I'm going to start saying that.
It's powerful, right? I mean, so in my life, and I've got a lot of life now, I'm more wise at 60 than I was at 28, like you.
Shows with the white beard.
Yeah, it's the white beard, right? It's a full beard now.
Yeah.
I looked at, it was almost 50 years before I could deal with the suffering that I had as a child. And what we do a lot of times, I have to look at that suffering and the abuse that I went through. I see it very much today in a positive light. Well, for many, many years and for decades, that abuse drove me through anger and resentment. And it drove my behavior and it drove me to make something out of my life. Mm-hmm. But I can say, I was definitely no Nelson Mandela. I was very angry, but I can look at that same thing today and I can see how the perfect puzzle came together in my life every single moment. We did an episode some time ago on connecting the dots. I could see those dots perfectly. And I could see that, you know, I suffered. There was a lot of suffering, there was a lot of pain, and there was a lot of struggle. But it's also that suffering, pain, and struggle that built in me this work ethic, this ability to overcome. I don't look at too much struggle as struggle. People, even getting ready for this competition, it's so interesting to watch how it would be kind of suffering. There's some parts that are suffering, and there are like people, I have a client that wants to really take his body to the next level, right? And he gets a little cold and he doesn't go to the gym. And I look at that and people say, well, of course, Billy's got a little cold. He shouldn't go work out. And the first thing I thought to myself was, holy crap, what do you mean you didn't go to the gym? Because little things like that, just for me, little things don't stop me from moving forward toward what my desire, my spark is telling me to move toward. And I do have to look at my childhood, and my grandfather was a tough SOB, man. He was tough and he taught me that. He taught me, yeah, you got your ass kicked, literally. And yeah, you know, and you got to be able to get back up and you got to keep moving. He used to say, Billy, you know, you got to get back up and you got to keep moving and you always got to stay inspired. That's where the whole saying comes from, is from my grandfather, mm-hmm. you know? So I get this chapter pretty well. I get it pretty well. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, for me, I would say that I never had that suffer kind of experience. And I use that from people that I meet like you and a whole bunch of the people that we've got to meet, is that that's why I won't put myself or create conditions for me to suffer intentionally, even though people don't do it intentionally, you know, when they self-sabotage and do stuff that I always look at the, it could be worse, you know, kind of thing. I'm grateful. So a lot of the gratitude has kept me from putting myself in like a suffering position, because growing up and stuff like that, my dad worked a lot and there was a lot that he had to sacrifice and suffer for us, but he never showed it. He was always grateful for having us. He never complained about us being, you know, a nuisance or anything like that. I mean, I've never heard him complain about it. But as I got older, I noticed him, you know, suffering and kind of making sacrifices and doing stuff in silence. You know, it was never a battle for us to fight. It was his to go through. And my dad's loving and enjoying life now, but that also kind of passed to me, my brother, my sister. We all are the same way. We will grind hard to make sure we don't have to suffer, because we got to watch that. And I think that's the same way when I meet people that have similar stories to you. You don't have to be somebody who suffered or somebody who is suffering now to appreciate the fact what suffering brings out of the people that you meet. You know, I think that's a big thing. It's like, oh, I didn't have a bad childhood, so I can't relate. You don't have to relate. You can understand that it always could have been worse. You could understand that you're, if anything, you're on a step ahead that you didn't have to go back and, you know, figure out all these things. I think that's the biggest thing to take away, because when I hear it, it sounds incredible, you know, but can I relate to any of that? No, in all reality, no.
Sure.
But I could understand how that can propel somebody to go forward. So any small inconvenience, I try to look in that. What's coming out of this versus where did it put me? And I think that's what I get out of this.
I think the challenge that people have when they have abuse or trauma in their life, and we talked about apathy this week, is they get caught in a victim story. And that's just flipping it to the hero's journey. Now, I think a lot of people are struggling and suffering with the pandemic. I think a lot of people had to change the directions of their life. And you have a choice. You can suffer or you can thrive. And it really is a choice. I mean, it might, sometimes when you're in it, you're like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? And how do I get out of this? And this is so bad and everything. And I get that. No, there's no, you're a human being. Everything changed. But when you could take that, and if you can slow down with it and you could turn that into something that motivates you, that connects that spark to your heart, and you change your life, you'll look back on the pandemic like, this is the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because now I'm doing this when I was doing that, right? And that's what I think this whole chapter was about. It's not about who struggled the most or who suffered the most. It's the story they're telling you is that to really have joy, and remember, joy is a state of energy. Joy's energy is when you're centered, fulfilled, it's oneness, it's space, it's timeless, it's unlimited, it's whole. That's the joy energy. And it's an energy of unconditional love. That's what joy is. And that is a purple zone energy. What I think they're trying to say, because I can't put words into the Dalai Lama's mouth, right? But I think what they're trying to convey in this chapter is that when you do struggle, you have to go through the struggle. You can't resist it. And on the other side of that, you will find joy. That's just the pendulum swing. It's a big pendulum swing, but it's a pendulum swing. So many people will try to avoid it or repress it or run away from it. You know, if you're complaining, you are running away from it. You are resisting it. And sometimes, like, the things that happen with the pandemic and things that happen, we lose people, we lose jobs, we lose our health. And out of those struggles, when you overcome them, you will find a sense of joy that it's hard to explain. I think that's what they're trying to say in there. Would you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I believe for sure in that aspect. And I also think you said something that when people avoid and repress and kind of push things down, I also think that's kind of, you know, for the smaller things in life too. It's not necessarily, you know, child abuse or things like that.
Right.
I got very used to telling people, you're just afraid to be uncomfortable. You're afraid to have to struggle, and you're afraid to fail, you know, quote unquote fail on something because you don't want to feel the struggle, but then you're not going to feel that reward of getting through it. You know, it's funny because we always relate everything to like a workout or something like that. My greatest feeling in the gym is when I struggled so damn hard to push something. When I put it down, I'm like, oh, my, stand out my way. I got a victory, you know, lap to go through. And it's such a good feeling because I know how hard I worked to get that. And you're not going to know that part of joy if you're constantly making your life easy by avoiding challenging yourself and growing and pushing yourself further. So like I said, it could be massive things like getting put into jail and right. being, you know, segregated and mistreated and stereotyped and all these things. Or is it a small thing that you can almost manage, you know, by putting yourself in certain situations to grow?
Like I was showing David. David's the one that's really doing the last 2 weeks for me because it's really intense. And I'll talk about it on one of the shows, but David has to run everything. So he runs everything, the food, what timing, everything else. And we were going over it and I was showing him my journal. I was showing him how I keep streaks, and it was 285 days since I started training for this. And I keep a streak. I have not missed one single workout in 285 days. I have trained in a garage with nobody, all by myself in there. I've gone through these phases of taking, I've lost since the bulking phase, I'm down 56 pounds in the contest phase, right? And those things, when you think about it, nobody, when you don't feel like working out, that's a struggle. And when you go in and do it, nobody ever did that and finished the workout leaving a gym. I wish I hadn't done that. You never hear those words. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. Or I'm so glad I did that. That's a little thing, like you're saying. It's not big things. It's like every day your ego is going to try to stop you. Mm-hmm. And that's the struggle. And the suffering comes when you don't face the struggle.
Yeah,
that's when you suffer. You know, that's when the ego is going to beat you up. You made a declaration, didn't go, didn't do it, got a little cold, decided I'm not going to work out today. And that's not a dig. And then you suffer. That's when you suffer. Would you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I think the biggest part of this, the suffering part, like you said, is having something where you know you can be in life and is constantly avoiding. You know, when we talk about like grief is unexpressed. Sure. Love, it's the same thing. Suffering is unexpressed potential that you're just wasting day to day because you're scared.
I think it's awesome, David. And I want to thank you for everything you're doing for me, getting ready for this show. This is, listen, I'm so glad I did this. I really am. We'll see how it turns out, and I'll let everybody know, and I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Same in the community. I know I haven't been in there lately, and I'll be back to my normal self very soon here. But I will see everybody tomorrow, so I will be there tomorrow, and come on in, and we'll get those goals set for you guys and get you guys all ready to go, and then we'll set up the third class too, which you guys are going to love the class tomorrow. Trust me. Anything else, Dave?
No, I'm excited. Hope to see you all tomorrow, and like I said, if you got any questions, let me know.
That's it for today's show. Our mission here is to create a shift on the planet. You could join us on this mission by simply like, share, and subscribe. Those links are right below the show. And as Grandpa always said, as always, stay inspired.